You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Are you a financial advisor?
I am not. I am a newsletter publisher and have been since 1979.
Mark, how would you describe what's going on in the stock markets right now and all this concern about bonds, especially in the long term?
Well, there's two things going on this week. There's a tendency for markets to reverse direction ahead of long holiday weekends. And it's a rule of thumb, nothing's 100%, but if you're rallying, and this applies to all markets, you know, whether it's commodities or stocks, but if you're rallying and then we're about to enter a long holiday weekend, markets tend to sort of back off or change direction. And if they've been rallying, they go down. And if they're down, they might rally, but more likely when they're rallying, they tend to pull back. I guess traders lighten up ahead of a long holiday. And so that's part and parcel to the little sell-off we had here the last couple of days in the market. So as we go into any long holidays, whether it's Memorial Day here in the U.S. or any of the Canadian holidays, you tend to get that pattern. And, of course, we had a little panic yesterday in the markets. Dow was down about 1,000 points intraday. It closed that thing down around 700 or 800. Tried to rally a little bit today and ended up ending flat on the end of the day. So the panic atmosphere ensued that when the long-term bonds posted a new relative low, which means interest rates spiked up. The story is that, you know, there weren't a lot of bidders for the bond auction that was occurring. So that created a little bit of a panic. You know, whether people realize it or not, the bond market is bigger than the stock market. So much bigger, more money there, movements in the bond market really, you know, sort of the tail wagging the dog. You know, something's wrong in the bond market and financing, that does affect stocks. So this has nothing to do with the Federal Reserve. This is the free market at work, and I've been talking about this for quite some time. You know, the question arises, you know, when's the Fed going to lower rates or raise rates or what the heck they're going to do? And, you know, it's more important to watch the bond market to see what the bonds are really doing. And the tail sort of wags the dog there for sure. And if rates are going up in the long bonds, you know, that's not what investors want to see. You know, they want to see lower rates, and that perhaps could affect the Federal Reserve's thinking about their prejudice toward raising or lowering rates here in the months ahead. So, you know, we have a debt crisis. Bonds are not happy about what's going on. I know the U.S. Congress here is trying to pass, or may have passed today, it's a tax bill. I didn't see that in the markets affecting them very much. Maybe they don't like all the ingredients of it, and it may still have to be approved by the Senate. So that's sort of something we have to watch here over the next few days. But long holiday weekend, little market sell-off, little negative action in the bond, created indigestion here. But, you know, keep in mind we've had a big rally in the markets, the equity markets, and, you know, since the April lows. So it really is not too surprising, you know, if we had more of a sell-off here, you know, maybe even after the holiday or into early June, just because the market is way overbought and, you know, could experience a, you know, bit of a correction. It was sort of what they call a V, as in victory, V formation on the charts, where you come down and you shoot up again, you know, on the other side. So, I think it's overall a bullish pattern, but we went so far so fast that, you know, you have to be psychologically prepared for that. But I'm still remaining more in the bull case. I still think that the year is going to be positive, and depends if you're trading or investing, of course.
What's going on with gold?
I've been a little negative on gold, you know, last couple months, actually, you know, it sort of said to me he got overdone. He got up to $3,500, and you know, that was just an orgasm to the upside. You know, just a way overdone. If you look at the charts, you have sort of a descending top formation, like lower peaks on the chart. And I just think a lot of it got discounted here. So, you know, big picture, nothing has changed. You know, we could have said the same thing when gold was $1,200, made the same comment, you know, big picture viewpoint versus short term. But it got overdone here. And a lot of the movement in gold historically is more related to geopolitical events than it has to do with inflation or interest rates. So, you know, maybe the gold market, as I mentioned in previous interviews, maybe anticipating things settling down in the geopolitical sphere, you know, meaning the war in Ukraine and Israeli war and the Iranian situation, and maybe it just feeling that things are going to settle down there and there's less reason to own gold short term. Silver did a little bit better. And interestingly, since we're talking about metals, the last couple of days there was some nice little rallies in palladium and platinum, which we took a position in our newsletter, sort of broke out to the upside a little bit. And if you look at the monthly charts, both are way, way behind in terms of any substantial rally if you compare it to what we've seen in the gold market. So maybe there's, you know, maybe we need, you know, these metals for defense and other, you know, important technological developments and inventions and so forth. So they maybe it's a little bit of a catch-up play here, maybe some real demand for these two metals. So I'm a little more bullish here on the little breakout in platinum and palladium because they've been, you know, held back for so long and really haven't taken off. So there's a little spike there. We'll see if that continues. But I did make a note of that in the newsletter. Silver, not much going on there. It seemed to act a little bit better than gold the last couple of days. Same story. Is it going to follow gold, or is it going to start marching to its own drummer the way we saw platinum and palladium for, you know, industrial or defense reasons and so forth? So just got to monitor the charts. I mean, obviously, silver's got a long way to go when and if it really breaks out. I'm sure we'll see $50 or $100 at some point in the future. You know, we don't know if that's 1 year or 10 years, but you know, the chart does look constructive. So in summary, I'm not bearish on the metals overall, or gold in particular. I just thought it got overdone here. And, you know, if you look at the chart formation in gold and you want to paint a, you know, a more serious corrective case, you know, we've seen over the years gold can easily drop, you know, $500 to $1,000 in a sharp correction. It's done this many times in the past, and certainly if gold broke 3,000 and got to 2,900 or less, it wouldn't surprise me, just in terms of market history. I'm not saying it has to go there, but, you know, that's what the chart says is possible. So like anything else, there's a time to sell and a time to buy if you're trading, and if you're long-term, these comments are sort of irrelevant because you're hoping for 5,000 or 10,000 and other things in the future. And of course, you know, one of the big stories out there, Jim, is, you know, is gold going to be tied to the treasury bonds and you know, other U.S. financings in the months and years ahead? There's a lot of talk about tying gold, and ever since Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard in 1971, you know, inflation's gone crazy and debt has gone nuts. And I guess the conservative viewpoint now is let's get back on a gold standard and let's try to tie our financing to gold and let's get the house in order here, so to speak. And I've mentioned, and I'm just speculating, but, you know, Judy Shelton is a possible candidate for Federal Reserve Board chairman, which Powell's position expires next summer. She may not be the one, but she's a big gold bug in terms of getting the Federal Reserve tied to gold versus financings and bonds and so forth. So if she really gets in, or that really happens over a year from now, that would be bullish for gold, I think. But it probably would be bullish anyway if the government decides for, you know, for whatever reason to start tying go to the bond market.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with copper?
Good question. I have to pull up the copper chart because I haven't paid much attention to it in the last few weeks, but I usually use Freeport-McMoRan as a good surrogate for it. And it sort of pretty much followed the market on the sell-off, but it hasn't recovered as much as we would have hoped. Not really clear. It's underperformed here a little bit. Maybe it's a relationship to the gold market and the metals in general that have been sort of underperforming here ever since the big peak in gold here in recent weeks. Some of the big copper stocks like Freeport I just mentioned are partially gold companies as well, in addition to producing copper. So in that particular stock instance, that might explain why Freeport underperformed, and that's sort of my benchmark stock that I look at least in terms of copper, but I have to do a little bit more work on it. We do have a position in it in the newsletter because I'm overall bullish on the economy and the stock market, and I think Freeport has its place in there because of the copper component, but it's a little unclear right here what's happening with copper.
What's going on the crypto front? I see Bitcoin's really been marching along.
Well, that's really the big story of the week. I know we topped the interview off with the stock market sell-off and the bond market, but that's been really the big story this week. Bitcoin really took off here. First it looked like it had some resistance around 109,000, and then went to 110, 111,000, and so forth, and looks to me like it's headed, next target around 120, 121. And again, no time associated with that. It could pull back for 2 weeks and then take off again or whatever. But beyond that, the next big number is around 140,000. It's become mainstream now. And a lot of investors are taking it seriously, and they didn't take it too seriously for a long time, but ever since the BlackRock created the ETF last March, the March in 2024, it became a serious investment alternative, and there was an ETF out there that was sort of the wind at the back of Bitcoin, because anytime somebody buys ETF, the ETF has to accumulate Bitcoin positions. That's coming for other cryptos, one in particular, XRP, which I mentioned previously. There's a bunch of ETFs in registration looking or seeking approval. And once those, I think one's already started to trade, that sort of wind at the back in terms of that crypto, XRP. So as more cryptos start creating ETFs, money managers have an allocation option here in terms of, well, I don't have to actually go into the crypto market. Let's do an exchange traded fund like now exists for Bitcoin. So, and I'm sure there's going to be other ETFs created, that maybe combine all of these. But, you can argue, well, why did Bitcoin take off? Is it because of the bond market, the uncertainty of U.S. debt and financing, concern about international financing issues, geopolitical concerns, on and on and on. But but we also know that the Trump administration wants to create a Bitcoin reserve, and there's been talk about this ever since the election. So again, the wind is at your back here. It's been a very volatile commodity in recent years, but I think with the government involvement now and with the ETFs being created, it's a real alternative. Like anything else, it's going to move up and down, like the S&P or the Dow Industrials or the Toronto stock market, But, the substance behind it is really what I'm saying now. You've got government involved, institutions involved, ETFs being created, which money managers, again, as I mentioned a moment ago, use as an allocation option to their clients. And, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean, who knows, you know, when Bitcoin first started trading and it was $50 and $100 and $200 and then $1,200 going back in the last 10 years. I guess nobody imagined that it would go up this much. So, there's got to be something, real substance behind something like this. And also, as you probably know, we've talked about this before, I'm not privy to all the specifics, but I know they have the amount of Bitcoin every several years. There's less out there, and that creates sort of a shortage, too. So the way it was originally created, the programming, they have the amount, I think, it's every few years or so, and then that makes there's less supply, and that's going to drive prices higher as well. So that's why so many other cryptos have been created, because obviously Bitcoin may not be around forever, or it may become so scarce that it could end up trading, when there's less around, for some incredibly high price. So I think this is one of the motivations to create other alternative cryptos that don't have the type of limitation. But to answer your question, that was a big story. Yep, no question about it. I mean, in a market that sort of underperformed this week overall, Bitcoin really stood out.
On the geocosmic front, solar flares last week knocked out radio in the Middle East for a while. Are we going to see more solar flares threatening our communications?
You know, there's a lot of stories about this. You can go to spaceweather.com and they have a story about some geomagnetic storm watch that's actually due tomorrow. So whether it's going to be serious or not, this has been going on. But they go into a big story about And this goes back to anywhere from several hundred to several thousand years ago that they discovered this thing called a Myiaki event, M-I-Y-A-K-E, which is apparently something even greater than the Carrington event. And we've talked about the Carrington event during these interviews for several years. That's the big solar flare back in 1859 but some of this Myiaki event, they look at the tree rings and all kinds of studies, going back to 12,000 B.C. all the way up to, 993 A.D., according to the studies that I'm seeing here. And, just huge solar bursts, and obviously something that happens in such a scarce time period like this, you can't sit around worrying about it, but the sun's always there, and there's always a risk of some strong solar flare or storm. I'm just wondering if we can do a study and chart the solar surges against the stock market or commodity markets and see if we can draw some correlation. I know, as you probably know, when I've talked about, we study the correlations with the lunar cycles and so forth. In fact, we've got a new moon coming up on the 26th, so right into the Memorial Day weekend here in the U.S. And sometimes these lunar cycles are coincident with changes of direction in the market. But just curious that they're talking about some solar, increase here around the time the stock market is a little choppy. So I'm just wondering, if I have to do a lot of research on this, and I don't know if I have the team to put it all together, but if we could chart all the geomagnetic solar flares against various markets, whether it's commodity markets or stocks, to see if there's some correlation, because certainly if the lunar cycles are coincident with sometimes highs and lows in the market, it would make sense that the geomagnetic activity from the sun might have a similar effect. So this is interesting stuff that, we think all the time, or we assume all the time, that markets only move because of human beings, moving prices around or emotions or panic and, human related events. But indeed, there might be a strong correlation between geocosmic and what happens here in our markets. And we already know that anyway in the studies over the years with, the seasonal tendencies in the markets. In fact, we've got the, summer solstice coming up the third week of June. So that's something, it's a little ways out here. But, sometimes you get little changes of direction in the market around the equinoxes and the solstices. So that should be interesting, monitoring the markets coming into June. See how we get sort of a reaction in the markets, either up or down, depending on what the markets are doing into that time frame. But yeah, that's sort of the summary of what's happening. Interesting stuff, little geomagnetic activity, little new moon coming up in a couple of days, and the summer solstice coming up in about 3 weeks or so.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always fun. Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.